Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm the creator and host, Andrew Rizza. I'm an allied healthcare professional that has worked in the industry for over 25 years, with the majority of my practice being in the private physical therapy space and in public school athletics. My curiosity prompted me to create Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listeners better understand the industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. This week's guest is Carl Gustafson. Carl is a physical therapist, licensed athletic trainer, and certified strength conditioning specialist with over 35 years of experience. Carl formerly owned and operated Sports and Physical Therapy Associates, a private physical therapy practice with 22 locations across Greater Massachusetts. This company was acquired by ATI Physical Therapy in 2015. He currently is a director of physical therapy at Boston Children's Hospital Division of Sports Medicine at the McKaylee Center. Carl also founded Therex PT, a virtual physical therapy platform that allows patients to receive therapy when and where they choose, at a fraction of the cost of conventional PT services. Carl was a former nationally ranked bodybuilder. He lives in Medfield, Massachusetts with his wife and has six children. Well, welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine.
Hey, Riz, great seeing you. I haven't seen you for a little bit.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. This is going to be, a great episode. Inaugural kind of send-off, which is great. I think the first episode, it's fitting, given my relationship with Carl. If anybody knows me or knows Carl, Carl had hired me, 28 years ago, right out of school as an athletic trainer to do outreach physical therapy and athletic training in some local schools. And Carl's a mentor to me. I've known him for, all of my career, and he's helped shape me as the individual I am today, and has helped guide me through my professional career. So I owe a lot to him, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today. So, Carl, I appreciate it. Thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Us purists, we got to stick together. We went right down the middle. Everyone veers off into different occupations and different, as they call, pivots. And me and you are right down the middle the same way for so many years.
Great. So let's get started here. I got some questions, and we can kind of go over some stuff on how you became a therapist, why you became a therapist, and what drives you today to continue to do what you do. So
it's a great question, and it's I guess it's kind of multi-layered. I went into college as a criminal justice major at Northeastern, and after doing a year at Northeastern, I continued to lift and work out, but I thought I was going to maybe own a little gym at nighttime and work in the criminal justice field during the day. But then I had hurt my back at Northeastern, and I went down and to the training room, and I met Les, who was one of the athletic trainers, and he kind of set me straight on what I should be doing while I was lifting. And after that, I really decided that instead of staying in criminal justice, I wanted to go into the health field. So I transferred over to physical therapy.
What made you, once you got into physical therapy, how long did you work as a staff therapist before you figured, hey, you know what, I really want to make my own, build my own business and kind of work on developing myself as a therapist, but also build a brand? And when did that start for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because, right out of the gate, I didn't like working in hospitals. There was just something very sterile. And I mean, God bless the people that do it day to day, but I didn't really like it. So I had gotten a job early on in private practice. So that was kind of the direction I was going to go already. And then when I was working for the group I was working for initially, I just saw kind of flaws. I felt like there wasn't a lot of mobility. There wasn't a way for physical therapists to be able to progress within that office. Almost like I used to always use the term, like when you look at a law firm or an accounting firm and you'd say, okay, that person's a partner and that person's moving up. Well, in physical therapy, there was nothing like that. So I knew that my ceiling of what I was going to be able to earn was only so much. So I just kind of said to myself, well, look, I need to go on my own, because the gentlemen that I were working for, they weren't going to let me kind of go to that next level. So that's kind of what made me start and go into private practice on my own. But at the same time, it was very scary because, you know, there was no safety nets. If you didn't make enough money that month, you didn't really get paid, but that was the direction I wanted to go.
I think a lot of people ask the question or think to themselves when they come out of school, they want to work for a year or two. At least that's what I'm seeing with a lot of the staff now. And then they think they want to go and open up their own practice. And to me, the experience, you know, speaks volumes for how that person becomes successful. So the one thing that I've noticed is that there's therapists today that don't really go out and market themselves as a therapist. They haven't had the experience. They don't know the physicians, and they feel like just opening a place that people are going to show up. What are some of the things you could advise? You know, if a therapist is looking to do that and move on and build their own business, what would you advise them to do? And then I think the second part of that question would be, do you think that's something that is sustainable today with the way the market is for healthcare, as we've seen things change over the past several years with how the reimbursement is going in certain parts of the country?
You know, I think it's a multi-layered kind of question, because on one hand, I think that, you know, coming out of school, it was very important for me to work with mature therapists that had experience. So working with those therapists for a few years was great to learn a lot of things I didn't know and I didn't learn in school. But then afterwards, I realized that physical therapy is basically three things. You have to develop and be a really good therapist. Then you have to be able to go out and market to certain groups. Namely, for me, it was orthopedic surgeons. And then you have to then deliver that product and then be able to bill it and collect it. And so what's going on in the industry now is young therapists, and I don't know what it is. I hate to say it, but I don't know whether it's getting the DPT has made smarter people be accepted into physical therapy school. But I have to admit, maybe not as bright of being able to go out and socially talk to people. I feel like most young therapists do not want to go out and talk to physician groups or sports teams or whatever. So consequently, they might be good therapists, but they haven't developed a network. And then once you develop that network, you have to make sure that that network is going to send you patients. And then once you develop that network and they send you patients, you have to be able to bill those patients to their insurance company. So you have to get all the insurance providerships. And then once you do that, then you have to have a tool to be able to collect that money. So I think it can be done. And very often I suggest to young therapists, I say, well, look, continue to work for the group you're working for, but then find a health club or a gym local, far enough away from the practice you're working from, so they don't think that you're kind of poaching from them, but far enough away where you could say, hey, you know, I'm going to devote 10 hours a week. I'm going to get a table. I'm going to ask the gym if I can work here and see some patients. And then try to test it out. Find some local, either sports teams, they could send you patients, or physicians or whoever. But then you have to, I mean, billing now is all computerized. So, I mean, it's much easier to do billing and collection than it was when I first came out, where you had to do everything by paper. But the difference is now is that 60% of the money that is collected is actually coming directly from the patient, not from the insurance company. So you have to, you know, it's a little bit harder because you have to bill every patient a lot more money than you used to, whereas the insurance company was kind of the person you went after before.
Great. I remember the days of paper. I've been around long enough to know that half the notes we wrote, you couldn't even read them. And I'm saying to myself, how do they even decipher what we put on the page, whether or not we actually provided care for the patient? But, you know, now with digital EMR, it's pretty easy.
And really, to be honest with you, the insurance companies, it's a fear, it's a phobia with these young therapists. They think that they have to write novels for paperwork. And really, the insurance company almost has the benefits baked in. So as long as you're doing good therapy and reasonable time frames, as long as you get enough information on that paperwork to send to the insurance company that they know what you did, the codes you used, they're not looking. They don't want a book. To be honest with you, there's no one even looking at the bills until you start to go over the allowed limits. So I think that the young therapists today need to calm down on the notes and learn how to give better therapy.
That's a great point. And, you know, now with AI technology coming in, there's been a lot of talk about that helping to generate a lot of the documentation for the therapist. So it's going to shorten their documentation time. So I think that's a key point. You mentioned relationships and being able to go out and talk to physicians. I find that as a healthcare provider, just being, you know, trying to be an extrovert and working in a way that you can, you're always talking to patients, you're always talking to people. I think it's easy to talk to physicians. They're just like us. So the way I end up building my relationships back in the day was one, watching you and what you did with your doctors when I was able to work closely with you. But I, as an athletic trainer, had always had a team physician on my sideline for football. So for me, I always had a fellow that was coming through Mass General that became a physician that stayed in Boston. So I built a lot of my relationships that way. So it allows me now to be able to call on those physicians. And even if they've moved on to different parts of the country and I have a patient that's moving, I have that relationship. And I feel like that conversation with them helps you to build a better relationship and better knowledge as a therapist. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think more the therapists and athletic trainers themselves need to just make themselves more widely available.
It's so true because, you know, the physicians, they want to build their practice too. And every year I give a talk over at Children's to all the new fellow doctors. And I say, look, you know, whatever you want to do, whether you are a lacrosse player or a dancer or whatever else, well, as you're building your practice, the first thing you should do in the community is go out and talk to the athletic trainer in the local high school and get to know them, because they're going to be kind of the conduit to know where everybody is, where the sports teams are, what's going on in the community. And then from there, to go out to the local, dance studios, or whether it's the local youth sports clubs. And they want to know. They want to know more about PT. They want to know more about athletic training. So as you said, they're just people. And if you can talk to a patient, then you can talk to a doctor.
I agree. I feel like the shadowing piece too is key. You know, trying to take time out of your day to go and meet with these physicians to show that you're interested in them and their practice and their patient. I remember vividly, you would go twice a week to Harvard Vanguard or go to, you know, hang out with Dr. McKaylee. And that was kind of a free day for them. You know, they got you, the therapist, in the clinic when they're doing rounds, and then you're meeting the patient, meeting the other physicians that are coming in. So I feel like that helped to build your brand, new Carl Gustafson, and they weren't, you know, looking at, you know, the business itself, but they were looking at you to bring success to their patients.
No, it's so true. And I have to say, you know, Dr. McKaylee at Children's Hospital, basically the father of sports medicine, I just happened to be lucky enough to go to Children's to do my clinical in college. And that's how I met him. And I would twice a week, you know, when I first left the group I was working with, I told him I was leaving. He goes, I don't want you to leave. I said, well, I already quit. And so he said, well, I want you to come and use my office a few times a week, and you can see some of the trouble cases I have. And so I used to call it my education day, because I would go and see some of his patients. But in his office, he just had bookshelves of journals, and I would just sit and read those journals in between seeing patients. And I used to say it was my education day. And really it was, in the sense that I learned from him. I learned it from two sides of it, because I saw myself being the therapist treating the patients, but then I saw how in an office of physicians, how they would be confused as to saying, well, Carl, why did this kid not get better? And I would look at the notes of what the PT did or the PT didn't do, and I was able to bounce things back off of them. So it was like really being that middle person, being able to see it from both sides.
Great. I think, you know, therapists and athletic trainers themselves just doing more of that would be really beneficial to their education. I feel like coming out of school now, even with a MSAT, and some now they have DATs now, but even the physical therapist coming out, I feel like that is, I remember this when I came out, grad, director of sports medicine or athletic training was Chad Starkey. He was kind of, you know, one of the greatest that ever really taught the program at Northeastern. And we were the best kind of program on paper back then, how I got into Northeastern, but somehow I got in and I actually benefited from going there. But I remember him saying to us, this is just an entry-level position. You're an entry-level athletic trainer. The only way you're going to get better is to further education to continue to grow. And I felt like working with the peers around me and, you know, people that I didn't know yet, learn from them and learn from your mistakes, because we're not perfect. We're always going to make a mistake. We're always going to think back to like, well, why did I do that with that patient? And I think a lot of therapists are afraid, and athletic trainers, of progressions, progressive patient the right way. So what word of advice can you give, you know, new grads or even ones that have been out for a while to struggle with that? How do you progress a patient? What are some of the things that you look for in a patient that says to you, hey, I think I need to progress that patient?
You know, I've always thought from day one, and I think this came from, you know, when I was in college and I came out of college, I did a lot of competitive bodybuilding. And so, you know, you went to the gym and then after school, after your classes, and you dealt with all these people lifting and growing and getting stronger. And that's what's missing in the physical therapy and athletic training schools is you can read about lifting, but you really don't do it. So the only way to actually grow is to do more. So, and if you asked any therapist or athletic trainer about, you know, well, what should you do? They would probably be able to tell you what you should do. But when someone comes into therapy, I mean, the first thing you have to know is the tissue type, right? If it's tendon, joint, muscle, disc, whatever it is, and then you have to know the healing timeframes. But during those healing timeframes, as the tissue can take on more stress, then you want to progress them every time they come into physical therapy. And that's the part that I think is lacking, is that, you know, I see patients right now. Now I currently am working over at the Department of Sports Medicine at Children's Hospital. I'm the director of PT at, let's call the McKaylee Center. And it was a preventative sports medicine facility. And then they allowed me to come in as a therapist to kind of problem solve with patients that aren't doing well. And clearly above and beyond, the reason the people that they send me that aren't progressing are the people that actually didn't move up. They went to therapy for 6-8 weeks and I'll say, what did you do? And they really didn't move up. So it's really, I look at it like every single time a patient comes into therapy, the goal of what I am showing them is not just reviewing what I gave them, but showing them the next line of exercises and progression that they should be doing. And that's what I think is really what's lacking in conventional outpatient PT.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed, you know, being, you know, a clinical director now of a practice where it's actually the same office that we shared together for 20 years,
yes.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, looking, we do what's called caseload rounds every week. We try to pull out a few patients and see where those patients are and like the length of stay of the patient, how long they've been there for a simple ankle sprain, we would think would be four to six weeks and they should be done. But when you see some of the care, when you're like, well, why have they been here so long? And you look back at the progressions and then you ask the therapist, why has this person only been doing 3 sets of 10 and they're still using TheraBand? And it, you know, sometimes it turns to be the new therapist coming out and they just are, you know, overwhelmed. What they say is overwhelmed with all of their, you know, duties during the day. And it could be someone that's been seasoned that maybe is tired as a therapist and doesn't put forth the extra effort. What would you say to that person, you know, if you came across that? What were some of your words of wisdom, you know, being in the industry for as long as you have and the success that you've had as a therapist?
I think it really just comes down to that you want to think that each time a person comes and sees you, you want to see if they have progressed from, you know, I mean, we can say it, oh, the person goes from passive to active to resistive motion to sport specific patterns. And based on the tissue type, you know, they can only go so fast, but you want to know that tissue type. And then also you want to know the surgeries. You know, I call them the 6 R's basically. You know, you remove something, you release something, you replace something, you reconstruct something, you resurface it. And you want to know those surgeries so that every time a person comes in based on where they were, that person is getting the next line of progression. And where I am, most people have already seen a PT already. So I only see people once a month where I am. And on average of my patients, I only see them 3 visits, which you'd probably say is like, oh my God, that's crazy. But by me being able to give them the progressions to take with them in them, and most of them also having gone through PT, they're so sick of PT that they want to do it either at home on their own. They want to do it with their athletic trainer at their school. So I really find that I do a lot of mentoring and talking to local PTs when I say, hey, I'm going to send this patient back to you, but this is where they want to progress to. It's kind of like an aha moment because they know it. They know if you said this person has to move up, they mm-hmm. know the answer to that. But for some reason, like you said, maybe they're busy in their day and still the hot pack and the ice pack and the electrical stim, it kind of almost blurs the whole thing. And the reality is, folks, that insurance companies don't pay for those anymore. So even though you're administrating them and it's taking half the time they're in the clinic, you're actually not getting paid for them.
That's true. And I remember, you know, looking back, you would swing the ultrasound head around your head like a lasso and just whack therapists and try to get them to get their things together. So we always had a good time in the clinic. And I find that that's something too. You have to have fun with what you're doing. So if you're not having fun, you're not going to enjoy going to work every day. So, you know, to that therapist that wants to punch in at 7 and leave right at 3, you know, what advice? I think there's always got to be a little bit extra. There has to be. It's not the company you're working for is what I always think of. It's you. You're investing in yourself as the therapist or the athletic trainer. You're investing in your future, and you're trying to get others to see you as that person they want to come see. So what advice would you give to that person that is just a 9-to-5 or a 12-to-8 and doesn't want to extend? Do you think this is a career for them? Do you think that there's a place for them?
I think that, you know, one statement, I mean, the guys that first taught me a lot when I got out of college, from a kind of outside professional look of life, they didn't teach me all that much. They taught me a lot about PT, but not probably how to live the best lifestyle. But one thing one of them said once was, you know, come to work every day like you own the place. And I thought that was just a good way of stating it, because it was like I was coming to work developing myself. I was learning from them. And I was getting paid from them, but I was trying to make myself better. And so I think that if a therapist can, it's 40 hours. The reason why they don't, you're considered to be a healthcare professional. So that means you don't have a 40-hour a week. So I really think that if you're not working 50 hours a week, you're not going to get paid for maybe 10 hours a week. But if you're not developing maybe your own PT practice, or you're not doing some continuing ed, or you're not mentoring a younger therapist, or you're not on the field with an athletic trainer helping them out, 40 hours a week is what your company is going to pay you to treat patients so they can justify how much you should get paid based on how much you're bringing in. But those other 10 hours a week, you really should be thinking that I'm doing 10 hours a week every week on my own to make myself better and make myself grow.
I think that's a great point. And you never know what's down the road, right? So if you go 10, 15 years just being, you know, Joe therapist and nobody knows about you, and you decide to go move along and do your own thing, where are the referrals coming from, right? Yeah. So that's the lifeblood. I feel like you have to knock on doors, even though you've been established for a while. This therapist we've worked with, an athletic trainers for 20 years, that still do it. Yeah. And because there's new doctors coming into the space and some that are retiring. So, you know, just because you're there doesn't mean that they're going to refer to you. So I think that's very important.
My dad used to say, he was an insurance salesman. He used to say, you knock on 10 doors, 3 people will talk to you, 1 person will buy it. Don't take it personal. And I love that because he just made it so that he understood. And the other thing is, one of our, you know, Dan Klein, our old business manager, said one time, he said, look, people, what they don't need today, they might need tomorrow. So you got to keep coming back and seeing if that's something that they'll need later. Initially, when we used to work with Harvard Vanguard, it was one of our largest referral sources. Initially, when they first started, they wouldn't let us see patients because they had their own PT. But I just kept every month I'd send them for little reports about what patients did kind of leak out to us. And after about 5 or 6 years of doing that, they came to us and said, hey, you know what? We're going to end our own PT here because it's not working, and we're going to use you guys. So it was just a perfect example of something that, you know, they didn't need us initially, but I just kept kind of going to them and telling them about who we are and what we were doing. And ultimately that was one of our biggest accounts.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great story, because I feel like there has to be that constant nagging at, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? So if you keep at it, somebody's going to need you someday because that clinic's going to shut down, or the hospital's going to feel like that's a lost leader and shut down that clinic. And where are they going to go to? They're going to go to that person that kept bugging them. Hey, remember that sports and physical therapy over in Wellesley? We can send someone over there. So I think it's important to keep that, you know, in the back of your mind. As a business owner, if you look back, what were some of the challenges that you faced that were probably the hardest parts of your career? How did you make those work? Like, what were some of the things that you said you woke up in the morning, like, this is crazy. Why am I doing this? Like, what is, I could just go and work 9 to 5. I'm not dealing with 120 employees. How am I going to make payroll? Like, to that person that's inspiring to be a business owner. And you were very successful. And I think that we'll talk a little bit about why, you know, the why did you get out? But what were those challenges and what did they look like for you?
I think that initially we started small. We didn't think that we were going to, you know, be adding 10, 20 clinics the way some of these bigger firms do. I think they're adding, you know, each, just talked to a therapist yesterday who said he was working for a group. They're going to try to add 8 clinics and they have no real business plan as to how they're doing it. The biggest, I think, concern with me back then is, you know, I bootstrapped the company for really the first 25 years until I sold it. So, you know, ultimately, it turned out to be that every month before I took a dollar, I had to generate $1 million. So I knew that each month, payroll, rent, every other assorted thing that goes along with the business, I needed $1 million before I could take anything and before I turned the lights on. And I think that was the biggest thing, was just the waxing and the waning of cash flow. Insurance companies can be a little bit ruthless sometimes about taking money back, or, you know, all of a sudden one insurance company will say, we're not going to pay, you know, as we normally would the payment cycle. So that could kind of throw a curveball into it. One of my biggest mistakes probably is I should have went out and got more credit lines earlier on in my career and had it so that I understood that those waxing and wanings, we would just dip more into credit lines, whereas I always did it personally out of my own accounts. And even though I did that and it worked, that was probably my biggest angst throughout. We never had issues with patient numbers, or we never had issues with referrals. We never had issues really with staff. We used Northeastern's co-op program, so it was like a feeder to us every year of sending us great PTs that trained under us, and we were able to hire them. So I would say if anyone said what was the biggest fear or angst, it was cash flow.
It's great, because you think about it, and you and I have chatted about this, you know, several times, I think, over the years. You know, we've had therapists that have left and started their own companies. One that worked with us very closely went and started a group down Rhode Island, and, you know, he had 3 clinics and then went to 2, and then to the point where I think you and I were chatting and he just said, I'm paying myself and that's it. And when do I cash it in and maybe sell? So, you know, you said, what was your determining factor to get out of being a business owner and sell the company and kind of move on to your next venture? Like, what was that breaking point? Was one, or was it just like, I just need to do something new?
No, that's a great, great question. And sometimes people used to say to me when I owned the company, they used to call it Carl Math. Carl Math was like the simplest math in the whole world, probably because I'm a simple guy, right?
And it's like gas station coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple.
That's coffee, Green Mountain, baby.
That's right.
So what ended up happening, I was making X, and I had a pay the tax man Y, and then I had whatever was left over. I was either going to spend it or save it. And in 2015, as Andrew knows, there was 4 blizzards in a row on Sunday night. And it really made me sit and ponder after that and worry, because I realized that pretty quickly, from going from no debt to about $1.5 million worth of debt, I realized, hey, I need to go out and get some financing. And so I was just going out looking for some financing, that I wouldn't have to pay back, debt-free financing, so that I wouldn't be able to, but they would get equity in the company. They would own part of the company. And so I went out and this one company came forward. They brought 15 companies. And ultimately, when I did Carl's simple math of what this, a bunch of companies would pay me, I said, okay, look, I'm going to make X, just like I do now, which was above and beyond, probably 10 times as much as a local PT place would make working for a local PT place. So I was going to make my X, I was going to pay the tax man Y, and I was going to have left over. I didn't have to save anything anymore because I already saved it all. It was all there. So me and my wife looked at each other and we just said, look, we can make the same amount of money, which is the highest amount of money I ever made. And I can have that basically forever, or I can go back and continue to try to generate $1 million every month and seeing more and more of this money coming out of the patient, not out of the insurance company. Or I have to give up some equity because I have to do this just so I don't, you know, don't run into this issue again. And, you know, looking forward now, 2015 for blizzards was one thing to worry about, but 2022 with COVID would have been, I don't know what I would have done. So I'm really glad I did it. It wasn't anything other than just a, you know, simple Karl math formula to figure out that I can put my family in a great position without any kind of issue.
You brought up a great point with COVID. I mean, you think about it, that was scary for a lot of people. And when I look back, I think all of us were like, what the F is going on? I think we, one, what is this virus that's going around? But then as a business owner, I remember us going through it because at that point we were about 5 years in as ATI physical therapy. From I had 15 staff members in our clinic down to two, me and one of the therapists. And, you know, we were able to remain open, but I'm saying to myself, how are they even making payroll for one? And then I think as a small business owner is what, you know was considered sports and physical therapy, you would have pulled the rest of your hair out. I know what you went through with the blizzards, again, shared the same office. But if you look at it and say, oh my God, like, what are we doing? Where are we going? And then you're getting people. Now you can't find staff to work when things start back up again. And the other big thing that just boggles my mind that I'm still trying to figure out, and maybe you can shed some light on this, you know, where are all these healthcare providers going and why are they only staying for a year, 18 months in a job and moving on? I mean, we talked earlier about making yourself or building yourself and building those relationships. But if you're moving around every 18 months, how does that build you as a professional?
Yeah. You know, in the bigger companies, I hate to say it, they don't want to know who you are. They don't want you to be on a website and have your bio and have people in the community know who you are, because then if you leave, then they're worried that you're going to take referrals with you. So the COVID thing, I don't know what I would have done, but at the same time, you know, creating a sound reputation for yourself, I think, is most important for young therapists, because, you know, it's something that, you know, I always used to say at ATI, I said, look, you know, you can't take this computer with you when you leave. You can't take any of this equipment out of the clinic, but you can take your reputation with you no matter where you go. So I think that you really, young therapists are making a huge mistake, and they're feeding right into the hands of corporate PT, because the corporate PT is happy that, okay, you stayed here for 2 years, I don't have to pay you top dollar. So they really don't like they. Companies were very surprised to see that I had therapists with me for over 20 years. And one thing I was very proud of myself is I realized, as I had said earlier in the interview, like, how do people stay with companies like accounting firms and law firms, is because they give that the managers of the clinics a percentage of the money that they bring in for accounting and legal. And I realized that, and I feel kind of like I was kind of broke the ice in doing that in our profession, that I had a formula where anyone who managed our clinics would also get a percentage of the profit of that clinic. And it worked. It worked for 20 something years, and it probably would have worked even for 20 more years. But it was just for me, I just decided to pull the plug. It wasn't that the formula didn't work. Maybe did I have to give away so much? Maybe not. But at the same time, young therapists, stay in the community where you want to be. Stay in the community where you might get married. Stay in the community where your kids are going to grow up, and build yourself. And you can make enough money as a sole proprietor in one clinic to make a great living. And you probably won't economically put yourself in such dire straits as I do, needing to generate $1 million. But trying to dance around and go to all these different jobs, there's only a ceiling of what you're going to make. You're not going to probably make ever more than maybe 150 grand. So you can do that on your own. So I would just say do it on your own and be your own boss.
Remember this conversation you had with a therapist probably 25 years ago. And it resonated with me because he had said, "Hey, Carl, I'm going to get my master's in PT." And you looked straight at him because I was working like right across from you. You go, "Dan, you can go get your master's, but the insurance company is only going to pay you so much. They don't care if you have a master's or a doctorate or a deep. The ceiling's the ceiling. Like, however, insurance company pays us."
Yes.
So that brings us back to the conversation of having a DPT. Like, there's been great debate back and forth about this. And do you feel it makes a better therapist, or do you feel like it just adds the alphabet onto the end of your name?
Yeah, I think, well, first off, I lived when the DPT was just a theory in the PT world. So the PTs back then, PT schools, wanted to have people get DPTs because they were hoping that they were going to be able to prescribe meds, NSAIDs, and also send for diagnostic testing the way they do in the military. And so that was kind of the goal, is to have PTs be able to have that next step of autonomy. And so then finally it did come out that, you know, first they had to get their master's, then they had to get their DPT. So the first thing I'd say to all young therapists, do not introduce yourself to a physician as a doctor, because that doctor, the medical doctor, has just gone through medical school, residency, specialty, probably fellowship, and they've gone to school for 12 years. So the last thing they want to hear anybody call themselves is a doctor when you've gone to school for maybe 2 more years or 3 more years than just a regular BS degree in PT. So first off, don't call yourself a doctor to doctors. That's very, doctors take it not in a good way. Second thing is, yes, I don't think it helped at all. Mainly the majority of new classes were in pharmacology, they were in diagnostic testing such as X-ray, and they're also in legal. And I think that's why all new PTs are so afraid of the insurance police coming after them, because they had to take all these courses. So I don't think that the DPT helped anybody. It surely did not make the insurance company pay any more. When I got out of college 35 years ago, insurance paid $100 a visit. And right now, on average, they probably pay about $120 a visit. So the insurance company doesn't think it worked either.
That's great insight on that. I think the question being is, you know, where do you think healthcare is going, and specifically PT in the future? Like, and it, the second part of that question is, I think will kind of transition us into your new venture, Therex PT. So, you know, first part, where do you think it's going? What do you think the landscape looks like? And how does this new company that you've built a foundation for and are trying to expand, how that's going to impact the PT space, and how do you think, or what's your vision of it in the future?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll use this one example. A guy named Jim McKelvey, he started a company called Square. It's basically, you see it every day. When you go to the Boston Garden, you want to buy a t-shirt from the guy on the street, he has a little credit card holder now that he can do it. If you want to go buy some ice cream someplace at a little stand outside, everybody has a little credit card machine. And so what he recognized, he found that years ago, you could only get a credit card machine if you had over $1 million worth of business. But he recognized that there are all these little companies that have under $1 million worth of business. And now, since he developed Square and Stripe also came out, that part of the economic business world is now greater using credit card machines than the companies that over $1 million. And he called that an earned secret. And I love that quote, because he only knew about this because he was in the field so long that he figured out there was a discrepancy or something that wasn't available to the average person. And what I feel is that physical therapy will always be needed. That people will always have surgery. People will always have issues, and surgeries will always be done. The question is, who will pay for it? And right now, in behind the scenes, these are my earned secrets, insurance companies are dealing with surgeons to have risk. And risk means that the insurance company is going to say to a surgeon, okay, we're going to give you $10,000 for your surgery. Pay the anesthesiologist, pay the hospital, pay your PA, and pay physical therapy. And you're only going to get so many visits. So there's only going to be so many visits out there that will be paid by insurance for post-op. And a lot of those physicians now are told by their hospitals, we'll keep that physical therapy within the hospital. So there's going to be less visits out there for the private practice sector, unless you want to go into the risk with the doctor as to how much you'll get paid, which isn't a lot. The second thing is 60% of the PT visit, when I got out of college, it used to be that it was a $5 copay, and then the patient's visit would be paid for, or a $20 deductible payment, and then the patient's visit would be paid for. And now 60%, some patients will have a $60 copay, and the insurance only pays $95. So do the math. $35 is what the insurance company is paying, and $60 is what the patient's paying. So more money now is coming out of the patient pocket. What that's doing is it's making patients not be able to be affordable to go to physical therapy. They don't have the time to go. They can't leave work. They can't pay for parking. Then they can't pay the copay or the deductible. So my earned secret was that the exercise progressions that we used in our clinics, I said, I need to take this to the next level so that everybody has access to physical therapy where they want to do it, when they want to do it. And whether you're me, you, or LeBron James, if we sprain our ankle, basically for the first 8 to 12 weeks, we're doing the same thing. And then after that, you go one direction. You got to get back to the Weston High School field. I got to go back to children's, and LeBron's got to go back to basketball. So each person's sport-specific phase is a little different. But the initial part of physical therapy should be able to be, for the most part, able to be done online through a program which basically has a, if you do A and you pass go at A for a period of time, then you can go to B. If you go to B, then you can go to C. And that's what the program that I developed online now, it's called therexpt.com. And it's a program that has over 30 different non-surgical diagnoses which people can progress in. It has fitness programs. It has specialty programs, return to throwing, return to running. And these programs are out there for people who can't afford, don't have time, or geographically can't get to PT. Some people are all having the clinic in Wellesley, we know that people are always, there's going to be some people that can always get to PT and they can afford to go to PT. But there's, working at Children's Hospital, I see there's so many patients right now who can't afford to do that. Some patients will spend up to 10% of their gross income on their kids' sports. But if that kid goes down and has an injury, that kid might not be able to go back to their sport. So I really feel like I'm really happy. I'm really excited about this project. Children's Hospital Sports Medicine has embraced it, and they let me use it with every patient. I feel as though I want to put also in multi-languages. Two of my youngest daughters are from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we have gone to countries, I'm sure many people have, third world countries, where there's absolutely no ability to get healthcare. So I really want to put this in multi-languages so people can utilize this, and physical therapy can be for everybody. So I'm excited about it.
I think it's a great program platform. You and I, had, you'd showed it to me, and I looked at it, and I think it's amazing. You mentioned sports for families, and you know what parents pay for their kids now with all the club sports, and then trying to specialize, which we know sometimes can be dangerous, but sometimes it's the way out of a community for a kid. So for that young athlete, it's a way out to get to college. So if you think of the injury and you think of the financial hardship and the economic hardship that that holds onto the family, if they can't get out and they can't pay for college, then what? So it's a, I think a spiral that goes, it's another conversation for another day, but I think there's a lot of implications there, you know. And I'm going to have a future episode coming up on what's called The Healthy Home with Vin Ferrara, who's the CEO and founder of that, where we talk about economics and health and the way that the home is built, being like the general health of the home. And that kind of turns back to what you're saying. Like if you offer something at a price that is beneficial financially for that family, and they can get the therapy they need if they don't have the means. And we're talking, you know, it sounds like non-surgical related injuries. And I'm sure there's some surgical that you could at the beginning stages. But it'd be interesting to see like how your platform grows. Now, do you feel like there's a platform that might turn into being more of a tele-PT as well, where you'll have people available to ask questions and answer questions if needed? Do you feel like that's where, once this takes off and starts moving in the positive direction that it should, is that level of expansion for you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it can be three-tiered really. Right now I have it so that at the bottom of every page of every program of every progression, it says, have questions, ask info at therexpt.com. And that's me. Basically, people can send me questions about the programs if they have any, they hit a little stumbling block. And to be honest with you, we've used it on over 500 patients now, and I get very few questions. I feel the good news is intuitively then, I feel like the program is going in the right direction for people to understand it. And, you know, what do they say? Desperation breeds ingenuity. So when people are desperate and they can't get there, you know, they actually come back and say, no, I figured it out. So I think that that could be the next stage, is to have it so that a PT could be available. I think that's kind of down the road, that I could have a PT there, whether it's me or someone else, and just, you know, half the day, you could just have it say, okay, it's, you know, 15 minutes. The person doesn't need to go to physical. I mean, if they can afford it, great. But if a person has three questions that they just need to be asked and it's 10 minutes, and you say, okay, for a 10-minute slot, it's X, it's $10 or $20 or whatever else, then I think that could be the next part of it where there is some live PT assistance.
Yeah, I think there's a multi-level approach, I think, with all of it. I think it starts with, if we look back, like athletic trainers working in the high school, just that direct access to them, right? National Athletic Trainers Month, once again, I think, you know, if you know your athletic trainer or have had the exposure to them or had kids that have met with them, they're kind of the first, you know, hands on deck when it comes to injuries. So I feel like, you know, that relationship is key. And then that direct access to, right, we talk about, what's direct access look like? And if the athletic trainer is evaluated, and they can refer them over to PT or to a Therex PT, right? So if you can bring that into the high school, and I think you and I had a brief conversation about this, how do you market to high schools without athletic trainers? Like, how does that look in the framework of your company and what that could help out with in some of these remote locations or schools that don't have the funding to hire an athletic trainer?
Yeah. So, you know, think of it. I mean, what's the kiss of death for an athletic trainer is that kid that comes back to the athletic trainer and says, oh yeah, my PT says I'm ready to go back on the field. The athletic trainer's like, I have no idea what you've done. I don't know where you're at with this.
And you've done any functional training.
You look terrible. You know, I mean, you walked in here limping.
Can't do a single leg squat.
So why not have a tool? And again, it's not me. It's a program. You know, you buy a software program for PT right now, and they say, we have 5,000 exercises we're going to give you. But it's almost like buying 5,000 ingredients for a cake, but there's no recipe. So what I want you to think of is that these programs are recipes, and these recipes are progressions that the PT can use. And then the kid can pull this up on their computer or their phone right at the athletic training room and say, oh, this is what I've been doing. I've been doing this, 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 this. Okay, well, look, you need to be able to get to this and this before you can get back on the field. And based on where you're at, and everyone thinks, oh, the doctor knows. The doctor does not know, and the doctor does not want to be put in the middle of that.
That's right. Absolutely.
So ultimately, I view that this is going to be a great tool for athletic trainers and physical therapists to talk more, because you know how it is. Athletic trainers and PTs do not talk. I always put my credentials after my name, because that way people, the athletic trainer will talk to me because they see him in athletic training. The PT will talk to me, and the strength coach will talk to me because they see him a strength coach. But, you know, right now I always use it. One of my talks, I'll say, well, you know, you have an athletic trainer here. Do you know how many athletic trainers there are in the city of Boston that has 20 high schools? And somebody will say 20. And I'll be like, that's a good answer. And somebody will say, oh, 10. And I'll be like, no, they have none. They have zero athletic trainers available. So if you go down on the field and there's an EMT on the sidelines, you know, Riz, that kid has to come off the field. They can't go back on the field because the EMT doesn't understand the whole thing. The athletic trainer knows, but the EMT doesn't know that. So this is a great resource, and that's what I've been trying to work with now, is the cities that don't have athletic trainers to say, hey, this is something that either a school nurse could even suggest, or the kid's parents can say, well, I don't want the kid to be out all year and we can't get to PT because I can't leave work. So yeah, this is a great tool, I think, for that.
Great. I think it's going to be interesting to see how you can expand this into the to the masses, and, you know, even get it to some of those communities where, you know, those sports teams need something that they don't have access to. And you made a great point with EMTs. You know, legally, they can't release anybody back to activity at all. And if that's happening, it's against their practice act. So for another day.
Yes.
So to close out today, I think the big thing is anything you would do differently. You know, if you look back over the last 30 years, right? Long time, 30 years. I can't even believe that I've been doing this for as long as I have. But would you change anything? And if not, why?
I remember a very experienced powerlifter in Massachusetts years ago was asked after, you know, he had a history of lifting crazy heavy weights and, you know, maybe using all kinds of substances and stuff, whatever else. And they asked him, what do you think? And he said, you know what? Give me the check. I'll pay the bill. I had a great experience. So I would say there's very little regrets, other than the only regret I'd probably say, like I said earlier, is that I wish I got a bigger credit line so I could have expanded maybe the company and been safer with the company than in the long run. Maybe I didn't have to sell it, but that would probably be my only regret. But and then, you know, I look back nostalgically at sports and PT and all the employees and managers and everybody I worked with. I used to always say to my kids, nobody works for me. Everybody works with me. And it was just such a great experience, and you were a big part of it, Riz. So yeah, no regrets. I'll pay the bill.
That's awesome, Carl. I really, truly do appreciate you coming on today. I owe a lot to you. I still have a sports and PT mug in my office in Weston. So
there you go.
I always, you know, sometimes I'll send you that little picture of that once in a while. But again, I truly do appreciate your time. I think today was a great learning experience for me as well. And I wish you all the best. And then until next time, I think we can maybe set up another time that we can see how the expansion of Therex PT has gone.
All right, great. Riz, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Great working with you, and I'll see you soon.
Great, Carl. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This is your creator and host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check us out on our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com/media. Stay tuned for our next episode.